Hey, welcome to episode 379, and here is the first ever interview with two partners from the land down under. An interesting story of a global top 25 bank CFO, Ken Christie, and his master tech partner, Mark Higgins, who ventured into the Australian automotive repair industry. Now here's a taste.
Yeah, like after you finish your apprenticeship, and that's a big difference between Australia and the US, is that all technicians in Australia go through a formal apprenticeship. So they do a four-year indentured apprenticeship, and I think they do the same in the UK, don't they, Mark?
Yeah.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Hi, Carm Capriotto here, and in a few short moments, we'll welcome Ken Christie and Mark Higgins from Australia here on the Aftermarket's Premier Talk Radio. Hey, this episode is brought to you by Federal Mogul Motor Parts and Garage Gurus for serious technical training and support online, on-site, and on demand. Garage Gurus is everything you need to know. Find out more, fmgarageGurus.com. Here's a shout out to new Facebook friends, Matt Lund, Ashley Civitello, and Charles Gaiman, and new LinkedIn connections, Joseph Jordan and Dan Lewick. Hey, are you in touch with our remarkable community? Hey, we'll get inside our ecosystem at remarkableresults.biz/social. Check this out. During November 2018, I'm giving away podcast collectibles. Yes, during this episode, I'll give you the password. Listen carefully. Just go to remarkableresults.biz/swag, S-W-A-G, and enter the password and enter the contest. A random drawing for the November 18 winners will be held in the first week of December 2018. Good luck. 6 months ago, Ken Christie, who is the chief financial officer of the Australian bank, was looking for a partner to open a BMW specialty shop. Mark Higgins answered his ad, and together they created BM Performance Center in Williamstown, Victoria, Australia. Ken Christie has always had a passion for cars and has his own collection. He also races. He loves to listen to the podcast, and that is how we hooked up. The story here is about their startup, the Australian aftermarket, their challenges opening a new business, their marketing efforts, and their respective roles. Mark Higgins tells the story how he went from the United Kingdom to Australia and became Ken's partner. His master tech experience allowed him to get to where he is today. Ken built the business case that he and Mark are implementing today. Find Ken and Mark's bios, the show's talking points, and links to their company at remarkableresults.biz/E379. And I'm so glad to hear them mention ideas they've picked up and used as a result of being a fan of the podcast. Now, let's go down under and learn about and appreciate the Australian aftermarket. Hey, a warm welcome to Ken Christie and Mark Higgins of BM Performance Center in, now get this everyone, Williamstown, Victoria, Australia.
Welcome, Carm.
Okay, you guys christened the show, my first Australian interview. So happy to have you guys here. And for the listener, here's what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about this brand new shop that's been open, what, 6 months now?
Yeah, just on 6 months.
Just under
yeah.
6 months. In the background that both of you have and some of the challenges that exist in the Australian aftermarket. When Ken and I were on the, the internet, just having our pre-call a while back, Ken reminded me that Australia is the same landmass size as the United States. And, you know, I've seen it on the map so many times, but I was never able to, you know, superimpose it to figure it out until you told me, Ken. And then you said, and you guys got, what, 300 million people, and we only have 25 million. So there's a lot of space in the outback?
Absolutely.
See, that's my first Australian word. I just got it. So, hey, so glad you're here. Ken, I guess it's really important for the listeners to know that you're the chief financial officer of Australian Bank, but you love cars.
Yeah, I've always had a passion for cars, and I've always had a big man shed, and the opportunity came around when my wife just said, well, you need to do something productive with the assets you own. And, you know, being a chief financial officer every day dealing with numbers. And, you know, I was very fortunate to find Mark as a partner, and I had the building, and we decided that we both had a passion for BMWs. And I race an M3 BMW, and Mark's, you know, been BMWs all his life. And really it was a meeting of the minds, and a lot of work to build our business case and viability of what we were trying to do. But yeah, it's a very different outlet for me from my day-to-day job.
Here's the impact, everyone. When Ken said that he was responsible for $4.5 billion in profit for the Australian Bank, I realized that he really has to have a passion to want to be in the car repair business. And you're going from, I don't know, 7, 8, 9 figures over here to, you know, maybe one comma or two commas over here.
I think it's just cheap labor for when he breaks his race car.
Oh, got it. Oh, see, Mark broke the code. I love it. Well, hey, so glad you're here. So when Ken, Mark approached you and said, hey, I want to start this business, and, you know, you're a legacy tech, and you've, I think, wrenched or owned business all over the world, haven't you?
Yes. So I originally started in the UK. That's where I did my apprenticeship with BMW. And I came over to Australia in 2011. And always stayed in the main dealer network for BMW. And then just now just evolved out of it, which has been nice.
Okay. So when your friend Ken called you and says, hey, I want to do this. Ken, did you already have the business plan, or did Mark, you have the business plan? Give us a minute of how this thing was birthed.
Mark, maybe I'll kick it off and you can jump in.
Yeah, go for it.
I had this idea that in the back of my mind that I wanted to create a workshop that was exclusively BMWs and Minis. I put an advertisement actually on Seek, which is our local recruitment, to look for a partner who wanted to do the same thing. And Mark had a look at that online and contacted me, and we decided to get together for dinner just to talk about this idea. And after about sort of 6 months, I suppose, of meeting, you know, once a month and brainstorming ideas, we decided to build a business case and give it a go.
So the business case, Ken, did you draw that up?
I think I conceptualized it, and, you know, I'd obviously had a lot of business cases in my day-to-day job, and, Mark had been less exposed, I suppose, to business cases, but Mark drove a lot of the technical aspects and pricing and bits and pieces, and we did a whole lot of benchmarking. In fact, Carm, it's something that we're more than happy to share. We built a pretty good financial model, which we can give to you afterwards, and any of your listeners can use that as a base model for their business in working out the viability of it. But it was a pretty extensive business case. I think Mark's accountant said, Mark, it was probably the best business case that he'd seen of all of his businesses, but it was like 50-odd pages long, so it was pretty extensive.
Oh, my. Oh, my. Viability. It's a great word that I think you just mentioned, Ken. Mark, when you looked at the plan, what was your first reaction?
It was a minefield. I've never been exposed to anything like that before. And it's been really good learning the other side of the business, how the business works. I've only seen, you know, the workshop and front of house, but I've never seen how it works behind the scenes, so to speak. And it's been good learning about that and how it affects everything.
Do you have mountains in Australia?
Yes.
What's the tallest mountain?
Mount Kosciuszko in New South Wales.
Mount Kosciuszko. Mark, was it like looking up Mount Kosciuszko?
It seemed more like Everest.
What has been the greatest challenge in the last just under 6 months for you guys?
I think getting a constant flow of cars, just because it's a new business, it's getting people to come in and trust you, I think, is the biggest thing.
Wow, marketing and trust and integrity and ethics and all that stuff. So every car stands on its own, if you will, reach in bringing back that customer and having that word of mouth. How's it going?
It's been good. It's been, you know, it comes in waves, but I think it's been generally as expected as we planned.
Rumor has it, for exercise, Ken goes out to shopping malls, and he's smiling right now. He says, listen, I for exercise, I go out to shopping malls, and I drop, postcards on cars?
Yes.
We both do.
We both do. What a great, you know, if you will, guerrilla marketing way. In fact, I think in one of the podcasts, someone had mentioned that a while back, that that's what they do. They literally go find their avatar target market vehicle. And they put something under the wiper blade.
Yeah, it's interesting because we still do it. It's really, I suppose, from our viewpoint, we actually put it on the driver's side window because it annoys people if you put it under the windscreen because they get in the car. Fortunately, all BMWs and Minis have enough space between the window and the trim that you can slide it down the side of the thing. But, yeah, look, we do that regularly. We knew that there'd be a four or five different prong marketing approach to this. And if you look at our Facebook reviews, they're phenomenal. We've had 5 out of 5 by every customer that's ever been in the workshop, and that's driven a lot of it. And Mark drives that side of the business. All of him and Gabby, his wife, sort of run that, all the electronic media side of it, and I tend to run the physical side because I like the exercise, and I pound the pavement for within a 10K radius or 10 kilometre radius, and we do a lot of car drops, and it's been very fruitful for us because we only do Minis and BMWs, and that's the only cars we drop on.
So your joy must be seeing those Facebook replies and those 5-star reviews, Ken.
It's fantastic. You know, I think Mark and I never, ever imagined we'd get the social media reviews that we've got, the passion that customers write about us on the web. And it's really blown me away. I think it's blown Mark away as well. And they recommend their friends, and that's a big medium that we use to drive customers into our workshop.
Mark, what kind of organic Facebook marketing are you doing?
We are trying to make it more relevant to people. So I think now we're going to try and make it more personal. So more faces into the Facebook posts and just not boring, repetitive, just reposts. And as everyone's doing at the moment, and Facebook seems to be flooded now with marketing and advertisement. And I think it might be changing soon.
Yeah, you know, I hear that more and more and more. It's got to be organic. It's got to be real. It's got to be homey. It's got to be family. And, you know, so many unbelievable ideas keep coming out when there's a really cool color. I'd say a very limited BMW color that not many people buy, and it is just cool and shiny. Why not take a picture of it and let the world see, hey, we got one of those, you know, green metallics in here today, right?
There's a lot of black cars.
Oh, you're getting a lot of black? You have a lot of black?
Yeah, a lot of black.
It's interesting. We just bought a Mini Cooper Works that we're about to build into a track car for the workshop, and we got it through the salvage auction. And fortunately, it didn't have as much damage as we thought. And Mark sort of said we should buy it, and we're about to build that into a YouTube channel. We're going to do a YouTube channel on how to build a track car build for 5K. So we're about to embark on that over the next couple of months.
I'm talking with Anthony Frohwein, a technical product specialist with Federal Mogul Motor Parts. Anthony, when you're in a shop, are you talking tech as well as product?
Whenever I do a physical training, there is product incorporated part of the whole training overall, but it's to maximize the time, whether it's diagnostics, whether it's inspection, whether it's installation. So that way they understand that, hey, by skipping that extra 20 seconds by putting on this set of brake pads and not replacing the hardware, hey, this might be the reason why that I'm getting comebacks. And usually being a ex-shop owner, I understand that the first time you get paid, the second time's free.
And so are the techs really starving for this information?
Oh, absolutely. A lot of times you have, we live in an industry where I like to say they cut the roast in half and they don't understand why, but they do it just because they've always been doing that type of an industry. So, you know, to break it through that, they've been doing something for 30 years and they see as they haven't been doing anything wrong, but it starts to open up their eyes to, hey, you know what? It wasn't necessarily wrong, but there is a better way.
So you're really talking to me about an aha moment.
Exactly.
And tell me, when you see that happening more and more from technicians that you're out with, how does it make you feel?
Oh, it's awesome. I mean, you really feel like you're giving back to the community overall. But ultimately, the way I tell them, you know, I look at every single vehicle that I worked on prior to, or I had my customer, just like I put my family in that vehicle. I look at it as I'm keeping everybody else that much safer because the job's getting done correctly.
Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Gurus is your go-to source for the vehicle training, technology, and answers you need to keep your next job on track. On site, online, or on demand, the gurus are here to help keep your business and your career on the road to success. Visit fmgarageguru.com. Hey, Carm here, and I'm stopping for just a second to tell you the November 2018 password for our SWAG swag contest. It is learning. Just go to remarkableresults.biz/swag to enter. Good luck. So in this city that you're in, is BMW a preferred or a high-end vehicle for the avatar customer that you're going for? Or are there a lot of Mercedes? Are there a lot of Audis? What's going on with the car mix?
BMW is actually second in sales numbers to Mercedes here, which is goes against global trend. There is a strong BMW group going on in Melbourne at the moment, and I think it's growing at the moment because there's a couple of new main dealers opening as well in the areas that didn't have them in. So I think that it is expanding at the moment.
And just to give you some perspective, Melbourne, where we're based, has got a population of nearly 5 million, calm. So we're a reasonably sized city relative to a lot of other cities, even in the US. The Australian car industry doesn't do any more manufacturing. We're a net importer of cars now. We had a GM and Ford and Toyota manufacturing in Australia for probably 50 years, but it's become more competitive to buy our cars offshore. So the Australian industry has really ceased production, which really opened up a big market over the last 25, 30 years to bring in cars from all over the world. And BMW were a very early adapter to the Australian market because of our left and right-hand drive. We're a right-hand drive. So the cars they make for the UK, they essentially can ship to Australia because we're right-hand drive as well.
Besides Mercedes and then BMW, what's in the top five?
Toyota is certainly a big brand. Certainly Audi and Volkswagen, probably more Volkswagen would be in the top five, but GM and Ford still hold reasonable positions, you know, in the marketplace here.
We're probably selling trucks.
Less trucks, more cars.
Okay. Interesting. Golly, so interesting. So when I think of Australia and the U.S. and the challenges that we have here with you know, all the bills in the government about getting OE information and, you know, data and who owns the data. What's going on in Australia with OE information and software, Mark? Are you have no problem getting what you need to fix these cars?
Very recently, it's starting to get a little bit easier. They were holding back, and there's been a few court cases with there's a governing body called VACC, which is an Australian car group. Trying to get the freedom of information. And now the OE information is slowly trickling out, but it's very slow, should we say. They're doing the bare minimum to get at the moment, just to get by.
How are you getting by if it's been a slow trickle?
A lot of help from friends that I've had in the dealership network. There is quite a lot of information on the internet of wiring diagrams, but also our software. We use factory software, which has a lot of wiring diagrams and functional descriptions in there that help with the diagnosis of cars as well.
So you have no problem getting factory software and updates?
No, not at all, no. That's not through the factory, though. That's through external sources, should we say.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And it's interesting, in the US, you can get it. And so there are ways to get it, but it's typically not available to Australian. Though there are a number of independent BMW workshops who run the same software, and they just get it through different sources around the world.
Another major challenge we have here in the US is the technician shortage. Has it hit Australia?
Yes, and they have been pushing for a while. They've been trying to get, well, that's the reason I came over, actually. They really pushed for technicians from the UK to come over and on visas, just for skilled visas. So there is a shortage, and I feel like a lot of people who were in the industry have left, especially the good ones.
And why?
I think it's due to pay and conditions. It's not the best paid job.
And so why? This is something we continue to talk about here, that the service professional needs to better working conditions, better pay. Of course, it all happens with running a better business and smarter, better margins and, you know, cost controls and smarter and better labor rates. It all trickles down into being able to pay more. Is the industry in Australia doing that?
I feel like it's the trade that gets left behind, and it's the most evolving trade as well, which makes it even a little more strange.
Yeah, it is quite odd, isn't it, Mark? Because, you know, the dealer margins are getting finer and finer on their new car sales. And as you know, in the US, they're often offering 5 years full service, you know, set price servicing and things like that in the US. They're doing the same in Australia. But I think the good technicians like Mark, who have really done an extensive amount of experience in the trade, are either going on to sort of management jobs within the dealerships to really lead large workshops, or they're going out on their own like Mark and I have done it. They want to control their own destiny and control their own future profitability.
I find it interesting, Ken, when you and I were first talked, you had mentioned that salaries and tech earnings in Australia, for example, for a starting wage is possibly about $50,000.
Yeah, like after you finish your apprenticeship, and that's a big difference between Australia and the US, is that all technicians in Australia go through a formal apprenticeship. So they do a 4-year indentured apprenticeship, and I think they do the same in the UK, don't they, Mark?
Yeah.
And then it's only then when you become qualified, but the starting salary's probably close to 50,000, would it be, Mark, in Australia for a fully qualified tech?
55, yeah.
Okay, so maybe the starting wage in a condition without an apprenticeship, mid-30s, maybe high-30s. And is the dollar of the same value, Ken, between the U.S.? I'm trying to figure out if the wages are comparable.
It's the equivalent of about sort of 40,000 U.S., I suppose, is another way of thinking about it. So 50,000 Australian dollars is equivalent of about just under 40,000 U.S. dollars. So but, you know, our charge-out rates, Mark, I think ours is $175, is that right, an hour?
Yeah.
Yeah, $175 an hour is your labor rate.
Yeah.
Is that up there for Australia?
It's mid-pack. So a main dealer, BMW, is about $240 to $280 an hour.
And generalists in the service business are what, 100 and quarter maybe?
Yeah, about that. About $125 to, yeah. Most BMW specialists are around about 200.
You had mentioned the apprenticeship. Does the apprentice have to work under a master?
They're supposed to, but not always. I can only speak from main dealership experience. The apprentice does get abused in a way they are stuck to. They learn how to do an oil service or brakes, and then they're just left to do that repetitive because that brings money in. And that's all they're interested in. This is why development of apprentices is not the best.
Yeah, I think it's just the reality is that, you know, an apprentice is going to start on sort of $20,000 a year and they want to maximise the value. We're probably going to be taking on an apprentice over the next 6 to 12 months, but, you know, for us it'll be a very different apprentice because that apprentice will be doing everything to learn everything about how the business is run right through to fixing brakes and repairing cars and using electronic equipment. But as you know, cars are getting so sophisticated these days that the technician's role has, you know, become quite different. And there is an acute shortage, you know, I think globally of technicians. But I think in the end, we've got a few people who we work with who are very good in that space and we're able to leverage them.
You know, I'm so surprised to hear you say, get them in there and give them a task to generate the money. And you had just mentioned, Mark, there's so many people leaving the industry. Is it the young people that have gone through the 4 or 5 or 6 years disenchanted, or is it the our veterans?
I think you've got all walks of, you know, the end of the scale. The veterans are just really, they're getting pummeled with this new technology as well, which is very hard to take on, and you're expected to know everything straight away, and it just gets so hard to take everything on and learn about all the systems when they change straight away again. It's very hard to keep up to speed with everything.
And I think the key thing for us was we didn't ever want to stray from doing BMWs and Minis because we knew in the market we play, there's a niche opportunity. There's nobody within a sort of dealership within a sort of 20-mile radius essentially of us. We knew we had a captive market that's growing population-wise and it's going to have a next 20-year history. And one of the things Mark and I really talked about deeply about was how do we build a long-term sustainable business that's going to be here for the long haul? And I think that you can sometimes get blindsided by short things, and we just continue to invest in the business at every opportunity because we want to grow it long-term. And be it the programs we offer, like our ideas that we've actually got off your podcast, the STEM class for kids, you know, for science, technology, engineering and maths that we've got for 8 to 13-year-olds where they can come in on a Saturday and we get them, we have an engine and they've got to take off the water pump and put it back on and, you know, learn to change the tyre through to things like this BM Performance Centre experience, which I spoke to you about, which is we picked up from Porsche in New Zealand, actually, which is where the customer can come in, and especially M owners who, and we do a lot of M vehicles here because of our performance bent, but they come in and they actually do the service with you live, you know, and they actually, they're part of the service. And we put the diagnostics and up on the wall. We've got 42-inch flat screens. You probably see one above Mark, but we've got two other ones in the workshop. And the customers can see their car live running on the technician's laptop, and we can really explain to them, and they get so much closer to their car. And when you say this needs to be replaced, you can see why and you can explain it to them. And things like that that we're trying to differentiate ourselves in that people really are valuing.
I love what you just said. And can you go back and tell me what you call that?
So we call it the BM Performance Experience. And what it enables is customers who essentially own any of their vehicles who want to really understand more about how their vehicle's serviced and the electronics, and particularly M owners who have a real passion for the M3s or M5s or M4s. And when we do the service, a lot of them own their own business. They can take a couple of hours out of the day. We book the car in at a set time. They come in and they can do the service with us, and we put all of the electronics live on a flat screen in the bay. So
I find that fascinating. Now, is that a is that sold? Is there anything extra, or do you say, hey, we're going to do one of these a week?
Mark, you can talk to it. We don't charge anything extra for it at all. It's really the type of customer or the avatar of the customer we're seeking who has a passion for their cars, who really wants to understand it and is prepared to pay the right price. But it's more just the experiential side of it that they love because they never get that opportunity anywhere else. And that was just one of the – we had a number of ideas in our business case around how can we do things differently to differentiate ourselves in the marketplace. And that was just one of a number of ideas that we've sort of implemented.
I find it a fascinating idea. Now, Mark, take us through a little bit of BM Performance Experience. You've done this with a customer. What's going on? What are they asking you? The glow in their eyes?
They are most intrigued about the diagnostic process and how, you know, this concept of, you know, you plug the car in and it tells you what's wrong with it, and showing them that's not exactly the case, because people just think you plug it in, the car's so clever now, they just say, replace this. And just showing them how all the different parameters and how the cars run and all the different warm-up stages, and that's what they're most intrigued about, and how the car works and so forth, and how all the sensors, you can show them how the sensors work rather than just taking your word for it.
I love it. I just totally love it. I mean, and you could probably do a BM Performance Experience, and BM is the name of the shop here. Okay, it's the name of their shop. That's why it's called that. But you could probably do that for a group of people. Just take one person's car, but let them walk through the process with you.
We did a BMW Car Club came, and we done an evening with some of the car club owners. And we went through like just basic diagnostic procedures and on the big screen just to show them the same sort of thing, but in a big group. We did that for one evening.
We had about 30 people in attendance that night around the car, probably. Yep. Yeah.
And how many became customers?
I think about three or four of them. But we've had quite a few people just give a recommendation. So we had actually got one turning up today.
How cool. I mean, that's a great ROI right there.
Yeah, absolutely.
It really is. Ken, let me go back to this business case that you so eloquently talked about and built for Mark and for you guys to make a decision. You probably figured out that you can't be a generalist and be successful. Is that true?
Well, certainly all the reading. I did a lot of reading before I embarked on this, and obviously listened to a lot of podcasts, interesting your podcast, but also spoke to a lot of people. Just and it really came quickly to me that the generalist automotive technician just doesn't have the ability to get across the number of cars, and customers pay a premium to go to a specialist workshop. And so it was pretty clear in my mind that it had to be a one-make or two-make workshop, and then really getting comfort that, yes, we can get the software to be able to do that. And then thirdly, I think the most important thing, it's getting the right person to work with me, because originally this workshop, which was a brand new build, was just going to be used as a big man shed. And you probably see behind me, there's our car stack. That's my Mustang sitting up there on the 66 Fastback, sitting up on top of the...
Yes, you know, I was going to ask you whose Mustang that was. You do collect cars, right, Ken?
Yeah, I've got a few. And in fact, you might not see it, but the M3 track car is below that.
Oh, yes. You probably see on the car stack. I see it, right.
And Mark's about to, we're about to embark on a Mini Cooper build. But it was really, I did the basics, but I think the great thing for Mark and I was we built the business case together, and Mark had validate assumptions we had on profits margin on parts, or, you know, what's our labor rate. We had this Excel model we built, allowed us to model any number of scenarios. And like I said, we're happy to just give you that, and you can put it on the web for your clients in case they want to ever use it as a base model for building a business case.
We'll offer it as a download.
Yeah. So we did a lot of validation and testing, Mark, and what was going to be our differentiation. And I suppose for us, the whole basis of our business case evolves around our promise to our customers, which you'll see on our website. But we're 100% committed to that, and that's what's going to give us sustainability. And we think we've got a blend of both financial skills in my case, technical skills in Mark's case. Mark's wife, Gabby, does a lot of any social media side and helps us out with that. And we've both got a pretty strong commitment. You know, it's really interesting. You know, often people say to me, you know, you're dropping cards on the weekend. But, you know, I might go out and do 4 hours of exercise, but I might drop, you know, 150 or 200 cards on BMWs and Minis. But I keep thinking this is a long-term sustainable business. And when I do retire, which will probably be in 5 or 6 years' time, what are my 5 or 6 interests? And this will be one of those 5 or 6 things that I'm going to get involved with, you know, on a daily basis, like one day a week, where at the moment I just do the accounts. Mark and I catch up for dinner once every couple of weeks and go through our plan and what we're going to do. But the business case was incredibly extensive. You know, I've seen business cases that work for large, you know, hundreds of millions of dollar investments, and ours was up there with all of those, you know.
Mark, you happy with your partner?
He'll do.
It's amazing when I ask a question like that and I have both people on to know what someone's going to say. It's perfect. Absolutely perfect. Average repair order. You know what? You wrote me and told me what that was, Mark, and it's $1,090.
$90, yeah. That's on average, yeah.
And again, you're not doing a lot of cars, but obviously the work is there.
The biggest factor is parts prices are very expensive. That's what pushes the repair order up quite a lot.
Okay, help me understand the parts distribution system out there in good old Australia.
So we've got a few suppliers. So we've got obviously the main dealers, and then we also have OE suppliers as well. So we've got 3 or 4 OE suppliers. I'm pretty sure it's to do with the tax system, because parts prices here are off the scale compared to what I was used to in the UK. Just to give you an example, a new key in the UK was about $150. Over in Australia, it's about $700. So that just shows you that two ends of the scale of how it's very different.
But why?
I think it's a combination of scale and scope. Some parts are specifically right-hand drive, where, you know, the mass market is a left-hand drive market for essentially Europe and the US. I think it's a combination of taxes. I think for specialty parts, some of the BMW dealerships, you know, really are maintaining their margins that they want to make. You know, we try and target 40% mark. Is that right on parts?
Around, where we get it? Roundabout, yeah.
That's where our target is, around about 40%. But we've got a really good supplier in HSY who's probably a bit like your MOOC equivalent, you know, but does a mainstream, but they just do European cars. So we get a lot of parts through that. We're a Castrol shop. We only use Castrol oil, for instance. So we try to pick a limited number of partners we want to work with and want to help us build a sustainable business. And I think, you know, when people look at our business case and look at the long-term partnerships we want to build, we're pretty committed to it, and they become committed to it. So they try and help us build a business, because we do believe it's a coalition of the willing. Sometimes it's got to help you do things, and you know, the things like the Mini track car build will do, we're going to be doing, we'll take some ideas from Chip Foose, the way he sort of set up that sort of channel with his part suppliers on the wall, and we'll do the same sort of thing. So for us, it's about really taking a lot of ideas that are in the world, and I'm in the US a couple of times a year for see family, and just to really take that and try and implement it into our business. We're happy to try things, aren't we, Mark? We've just got to keep trying things. But I might just show you around on the workshop, Cam, just so you've got an idea of what the workshop's like, just to give you. That's the M3 track car that I
race. Your name's on it.
And then that's the Mustang up the top. But to give you an idea, that's the Cooper S that we're building into that one there that we're about to build. This gives you an idea. The workshop's pretty full at the moment.
Yeah, nice looking shop. Too bad our listeners can't see it, but you've done a great job of explaining. How many bay? Let me see. I know this number of lifts, 4 lifts, 5 bays. And who's the service advisor? Is it Mark, or is it Mark working in the shop?
Mark, and we have obviously a contractor who works with us. But as you can see, we finished the workshop. The workshop's immaculate. You know, like it's all floor to ceiling painting in white. And I suppose because I own the building, that makes a big difference, because I don't mind spending the money on my own building. You know.
Yeah, I understand. What a great opportunity for Mark to answer an ad. Simply answer an ad.
When I thought about this idea, it was really, how can I get a partner who's got the same mindset to work together to grow what we want to grow in? And I always had in the back of my mind that, you know, having a passion for cars like I have, and I was prepared to put a lot of effort in to make this successful, because it's not a financial issue for me. Obviously, I get reasonably well paid in being the CFO of the Australian Bank, which is a big, you know, multinational bank, and that sort of covers, I suppose, anything that I want to do in life. But so this is really, not everybody gets that opportunity. And I suppose what I wanted to create was an opportunity for Mark as a partner that, one, I agreed to give the workshop for free for 3 years. That helps, you know, build a sustainable business, not having to pay rent and things like that, you know.
Hey, so while Mark is away, Ken, let's talk about the aftermarket and the associations and conferences. Bring us up to speed on Australia.
We've been very fortunate in Australia. We have a similar thing to what you have, which is an Apex setup. It's not like a SEMA show, but it's a reasonably large show. They probably have 250-odd exhibitors at the AAA show, which is the Australian Aftermarket Show, and that's really designed for people in the industry who really don't deal with the mainstream car brands but really deal in the aftermarket. And that particular show is held biannually every 2 years, and that's really where our key suppliers are, and that includes everybody from diagnostic equipment through to oil suppliers through to parts suppliers, you know, right across the spectrum. And so I think Mark and I are looking to come to Apex next year just to experience that, and that's really to pick up 3 or 4 new suppliers for Australia that aren't in the market that we can be their distributors for as a select group of partners. But it's a very well-attended event. They have a lot of technical sessions on how do you grow your business and others. And in fact, before we started the business, that show is usually held in September. Mark and I essentially went to that show, and that was where we got the idea of a few things that we've taken into the workshop. And we bought our hoist from that supplier that was there. But that's a pretty big show. And you can have a look at that online if you want to, on the AAA show. So, but it's an important part of the aftermarket segment, which is growing because Australia's population is growing. And I think that's the important thing. We've got a country that's, you know, as you said previously, same size as the United States, but only 25 million people. But we've got a very skilled immigration policy in Australia. So basically, if you've got a trade or you're an undergraduate, you've got an undergraduate degree and you're under 30 and single, Australia will open you with enormous arms. You can have as many people as you like that come to Australia. So basically, if you're educated, have a trade, or you're young and you're not, haven't got any dependents like children, Australia has an open immigration policy. It essentially says we're open to people like that. But if you're 55, married with 3 kids and not educated, the chance of you immigrating to Australia is virtually non-existent, because Australia is really looking for a younger, talented population to grow. So it's quite different than the US. My wife's a New Yorker, as you know, Carmen. The US immigration system for supporting families is very strong, where in Australia it's more skills-based assessment. So it's based off a point system. So you get points for different age categories, for whether you have children, whether you have a trade, whether you have a university degree. And then in the end you get a certain number of points. As long as you beat the number of points required to come to Australia, and you pass all the probity, they let you come to Australia.
Wow, how cool is that? And you were telling me that by 2040, Australia expects to have 41 million people. I mean, that's what, 22-some years? Not nearly double, but probably up there. Wow, how cool is that?
Yeah, very big population growth. And it's been population growth the last 20 years as well. It just continues to grow. Even though it's 24 hours on a plane from New York City to Australia, that's how long it takes.
So as I was saying that I was going to take a 12-hour plane ride from my town here in Buffalo, New York, to Australia, you had just corrected me, and you said it's how many hours?
24. So it'll take you whatever it flies from the East Coast to the West Coast. By the time you make your connector, it's about a 14-and-a-half-hour flight from LA through to Melbourne. So you got sort of 22-odd hours basically in that sort of envelope. But if you're going to headwinds, interestingly, sometimes I think probably one in six or seven times I fly back from LA, the plane doesn't actually get to Melbourne because of the headwinds. They have to pull in Sydney to refuel. And then they refuel in Sydney and then take off again. So it doesn't happen all the time, but it's not an uncommon occurrence if you're facing headwinds coming.
Ken, anything unique in Australia that allows you to, you know, work with a bunch of shops all together? You were mentioning a co-op.
Yeah. So one of the interesting things in Australia is that it got started about 35 years ago was a mutual or a not-for-profit cooperative of independent automotive shops around Australia. And they're a buying group, for the want of a better term. And they have nearly 3,000 suppliers, and all of our suppliers are members of that. And what it means is that we can negotiate prices with all of those individual customers that we have with those suppliers, but at the same time it means that we get billed 30 days after the end of the month. So we don't have to have credit accounts with all of those suppliers. We only have one credit account, and that's with Capricorn Group. And that Capricorn Group has got members as board members, and they also provide a dividend at the end of the year depending on the volume that you put through them. And so it's all not for profit, but it was a great part of the industry that I had no idea existed, but they also have a captive insurer. So nearly all the workshops use them for insurance, so they balance out all the risks. So therefore, we know that every dollar we spent is going to a not-for-profit that comes back to members as a member owner. And that makes it so much easier to manage your cash flows, because at the end of every month, they send you an itemized statement, and all you have to do is tick off your invoices and you've got 30 days to pay it. So, you know, you never cash flow short because your customers pay you immediately, but you don't pay for your parts for up to 60 days. So it's very cost efficient and very efficient to run a business.
Interesting. Hey, Mark, you're back. I'm glad that you were able to bring in a customer. I have two final questions for you. Training. I never got to the topic of training. You almost had me, you know, hooked there. You say, well, you know, we need information. We've got to have this. We've got to fix these cars. And I never asked the big training question. Who's supplying you the training? Where are you getting your training?
One of my good friends, he is the technical trainer for BMW. And he sends me a lot of information, shall we say. But so all training manuals for new car updates, new model updates, new systems. So I just go through, I read them and go through them. But we're still to look at, because I know Bosch do quite a few training sessions, so we need to look into that at some point as well.
There's a group in the US called the BIMRS, B-I-M-R-S, which is a coalition of independent BMW, and Mark and I are just considering whether we become members of that, which they have a yearly training session for 3 days. The challenge is trying to get Mark, if we want to go to the US twice or once next year, which is to go to the...
I've interviewed Seth Thorson a few times, and he's involved with that in supporting that group. Mark, a final question. Has your relationship with Ken and the base case made you a better leader?
I have become more aware of it. Before, I didn't really need to think of it. Obviously, I was a foreman and a workshop controller before this, but I never really thought about it. I just done it, so to speak. But now it's made me think more about what I do and your actions, because it's just me here at the moment. I'm a leader of myself at the moment, because it's just me. And we've got another technician coming in for 2 days a week now, because we're getting a little bit busier now. And it just takes the pressure off me a little bit now.
Are you guys at the point where, when you look back in our first 6 months, Ken, Mark, are you happy with where you're at? Are you making the case?
Yeah, we are. Financially, we are. I think one of the slight changes has been whenever we've been ahead, we've always invested that money, because Mark draws a salary, which we committed to, and Mark's got his salary that he takes out of the business, because we're an LLC or a proprietary limited company. But as we get money coming in the door, we want to invest. We've pretty much got all the equipment we need now. There's nothing really more we need. We're fully decked out. But we just want to continue to reinvest in the business, because we want to make it long-term sustainable. So, look, we're going to eventually have, you know, probably three people working plus someone in the front office or service advisor. That's our target over the next sort of 18 months. And we're pretty confident we're going to get there. The first 6 months has been a great flow of cars, and it's in line with what we build on our business case. So, you know, we were quite realistic around what we had to put into the money, the equity that both Mark and I put in cash to start the business. And, Mark got his independent assessment done by his accountant to make sure it was viable, and he did that. And I didn't have to go to an accountant, because I'm an accountant myself. So, but, yeah, look, I think the key for us is, when you're running a business, is how do you let your partner have as much freedom as you want, but you're a 50% owner. So sometimes I'm sure Mark goes, probably asking, why are you asking that question, Ken? And, you know, I'm sort of going to Mark, why are you doing that thing? But in the end, what we have agreed, and it's in our business case, is that if we've ever got an issue, we raise it with each other immediately, and so nothing festers. Why are you doing that? Well, let's talk about it. This is why, you know. And that makes a good partnership.
So the case includes the relationship and the openness of the partnership.
Yeah, that's written into the business case about how we'll operate, and, you know, roles and responsibilities, accountabilities, who does what.
Well, sounds smart. Can't wait to get my hands on it. This was fun, and I learned an awful lot. Ken Christie, Mark Higgins from BM Performance Center, my first ever interview from Australia. Now, will you give us a book report someday, say in 18 months, you know, say, let's come back on the show and we'll tell you that we have, you know, three locations and 20 employees and stuff like that?
We're happy to come back, you know, and do what we want to do.
Thank you all so much. Appreciate
it. Thanks very much.
Hey, thank you, Ken Christie and Mark Higgins, for blazing the trail with BM Performance Center and for showing the story of Australia's competitive aftermarket. The episodes, key talking points, and Ken and Mark's business case can be found at remarkableresults.biz/E379. Hey, have I told you lately that I'm honored to have you at the banquet of the spoken word? Thanks so much for your support of these powerful long-form audio interviews. Hey, don't forget, during November 2018, I'm giving away podcast swag. Go to remarkableresults.biz/swag, enter the password learning, and get into the contest. A random drawing for the November 2018 swag will be held in the first week of December. Good luck, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.